Rumors don't have to be true to generate a reaction. They merely have to sound plausible. In 1996, the San Jose Mercury News published a three-part series by Gary Webb linking the Nicaraguan Civil War, the CIA, and, most shockingly, the 80s crack epidemic in America's inner cities. Webb's story went like this. Back in the 80s, the CIA propped up a group of right-wing Contras dedicated to overthrowing the leftist Sandinista government of Nicaragua. The Contras financed their revolution by selling huge amounts of cocaine to U.S. traffickers, who refined it into the crack sold by Los Angeles gangs in black neighborhoods. The series fed a pre-existing narrative of African Americans being targeted by the government, and thus erupted a firestorm.
What you found here, Gary, is a monster.
You have no idea what you're getting into.
You really telling me that I should just walk away from this?
You'd be an idiot not to.
That's from a movie out later this month about Gary Webb titled Kill the Messenger, which documents what happened next. A widespread effort, ultimately successful, to discredit Webb and his reporting, powered by an unusual collaboration between major news organizations and the CIA. Now a declassified CIA report, unearthed by The Intercept's Ryan Devereaux, documents the agency's efforts to contain its public relations nightmare.
As Gary Webb would say, in the years that followed, he never believed that there was a vast sort of CIA conspiracy to undermine and destroy black communities through the introduction of crack cocaine. But the lead of his story could leave one with that impression, especially coupled with the art that accompanied the piece, which had a sort of CIA logo with the man smoking crack combined together. And so the CIA is freaking out about what's going on. They immediately start working with reporters. They're briefing former CIA officers who are speaking to the media about the story. They're even, as this document notes, sort of breaking some of their own rules in commenting on whether or not specific individual people have had relationships to the Central Intelligence Agency. So in short, what the CIA did was watch with relief as the biggest papers in the country just ravenously attacked the San Jose Mercury News and went after Gary Webb.
Why were the other major press so eager to discredit Webb? Is it because Webb's reporting was so wanting, or is it just because they got scooped, or is there some other explanation?
I think that there's a lot of credibility to the explanation that the LA Times was scooped in its own backyard by a smaller competitor paper. This regional newspaper had basically found this amazing story and run with it in this three-part investigation. Webb's story had a whole cast of characters and a lot of moving parts, and it was very complicated. But the LA Times, 2 years before his story came out, had run a piece by reporter Jesse Katz on a drug dealer named Freeway Rick Ross, and sort of detailing how Rick Ross was this, you know, enormous figure in Los Angeles drug trafficking. 2 years later, Rick Ross appears as a central figure in Webb's reporting. Katz returned to his examination of Rick Ross, and it was sort of strange turn of events, published a story responding to Webb's piece that actually downplayed the significance of Ross as a player in the South Central Los Angeles drug scene. Instead of attempting to advance the story, they tried to destroy a competitor paper and an award-winning investigative journalist.
Now, there were 17 reporters who participated in the debunking process. I assume most or all of them are alive. Have you had a chance to talk to them to find out what was going on, what their motivations were?
Author and journalist Nick Scow, who wrote the book Kill the Messenger, interviewed Jesse Katz. And in 2013, Katz expressed some serious regret over the way this whole thing played out. So I do think in hindsight, it definitely seems that at least some of the journalists that were involved in this process feel that it was over the top.
Intelligence reporting is a bit of a dance. You, the reporter, never tell the intelligence agency exactly what you have, and they certainly never tell you but the very bare minimum of what they think they can disclose. In this case, you're saying that the PR strategy was for the CIA to win the trust of these otherwise skeptical reporters by giving them information and access that the reporters normally wouldn't get, kind of ingratiating themselves. Is that what took place?
What the document suggests is that they were working with a ground base of journalists that they already trusted. And when these journalists approached them with an interest in attacking Webb's story, which may have been a way to approach the CIA, hey, I'm interested in sort of attacking this thing that you're drawing a lot of heat for. Why don't you give me information? It could have played out like that. And then the CIA was more than willing to speak to some of these reporters and sort of cross lines that it doesn't normally cross in addressing very specific things. And the media was more than happy to take these anonymous CIA quotes and run with them.
And how successful were they? What was the effect on Webb's reputation and his career?
I mean, it's complicated. There were a lot of deep dives into Webb's reporting, and credible reporters did find holes in the reporting.
For instance, there's not a whole lot of evidence that Gary Webb contacted the CIA for comment, although he said later that there were unreturned phone calls. It never comes up in any of the three pieces he wrote, which is a huge red flag, is it not?
It's pretty much standard practice to reach out to the agencies that are, you know, in question when you're making bold claims about a particular agency. And in Scow's biography of Webb, he also quotes a staffer at the San Jose Mercury News that says that Webb didn't reach out to the CIA for comment because Webb felt that it was sort of useless to reach out to the CIA for comment on something that they were obviously not going to give him any information on.
Were there other significant gaping holes in the story that these news organizations did locate?
The most substantive criticisms that were leveled at Webb were that his story relied heavily on three convicted drug dealers as sources, and some inconsistencies in the timelines that at least one of these individuals that he was focusing on presented. The other concerns centered around two words in the lead of his story, which was that millions of dollars were involved in this drug ring, and tons of cocaine were being peddled in the streets of South Central LA. And reporting that followed in the story didn't seem to support those claims.
As the other media focused on his reporting, what happened to him and his career?
He was discredited. His paper was discredited. He tendered resignation at the San Jose Mercury News, sort of moved about in the years that followed, but was never, ever able to recover the credibility that he lost as a result of the attack on his reporting. His depression, which some of his friends and coworkers suspect was present throughout his life, really intensified. His family and friends sort of watched him spiral downward until he took his own life in 2004.
What ultimately do you think is the legacy of Gary Webb's reporting, the legacy of dark alliances?
The CIA internal reviews of their own operations revealed that for more than a decade, the CIA was not reporting its assets' involvement in drug trafficking. This is during the Just Say No period, when Americans are being told that drugs are the absolute worst thing in the world, terrible, terrible scourge. Meanwhile, the CIA is completely turning a blind eye to its proxy armies who are involved in drug trafficking. I think that without his reporting, you know, those revelations would never have emerged. He felt the war on drugs was a total hypocrisy. In his original structuring of the story, that was the narrative that he really intended to drive home. Disparities in crack cocaine sentencing, along racial lines. He was truly ahead of his time in targeting the war on drugs as a real important social issue that needs critical examination. And I think he rightly earned a place among journalists who try to tell those stories and report on those stories as a legendary, important figure.
All right, Ryan, thank you.
Thanks very much, Bob.
Ryan Devereaux is a reporter for The Intercept.
WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.